kicker Justin Tucker.
Fox Sports Update on KPRL, brought to you by Deeds Bar and Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, Wine Down Wednesday, and specials Thursday through Saturday. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with your agribusiness update. Groups like the American Soybean Association applauded the Environmental Protection Agency and the Army Corps of Engineers for proposing a more workable version of the Waters of the U.S. rule for agriculture. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association Chief Counsel, Mary Thomas Hart, says this WOTUS announcement acknowledges the government should work to protect lakes, rivers, and oceans rather than regulating ditches and ponds on family farms and ranches. Two traders with knowledge of the deal told Reuters that China bought at least 14 cargoes of U.S. soybeans. It's the largest Chinese purchase since early in 2025 and the most significant since an October summit between President Trump and President Xi Jinping in South Korea. China's state-owned grain trader COFCO bought at least 840,000 metric tons in December and January, bringing the total to almost 1 million metric tons. And Omaha Steak President and CEO Nate Rempe says, unfortunately, America's beef bills will likely keep climbing. He told Fox News that the nation's shrinking cattle supply and continued record demand are driving the possibility of $10 per pound ground beef that could stretch family budgets for some time. Rempe says we need to get our arms around this in the U.S., adding prices won't likely come down in a significant way until 2027.
For over 40 years, the Ag Information Network has been providing news and information for the most important industry in the world, agriculture. The Ag Information Network gives you worldwide updates from local producers to regional organizations, from major crops like wheat and corn to animal agriculture to specialty crops like apples, almonds, and cherries. We report on stories that mean the most to you. Online at aginfo.net, the Ag Information Network, trusted and transparent journalism lasting for the next generation. For the last 40 years, the Ag Information Network has been the source of news for farmers and ranchers. Yet we have never seen such an assault on farming and our food supply as we do today. From fuel to fertilizer, farmers are facing unprecedented economic challenges. This is why agriculture news that farmers receive comes from the Ag Information Network, reaching coast to coast. Deep roots in farming and decades of reporting, the Ag Information Network, trusted and transparent journalism for generations.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with today's Agribusiness Update.
Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
This Fox Business News Update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report. Optimism for a December rate cut is growing as investors weigh a bunch of delayed economic data that was released on Tuesday. U.S. retail sales rose in September, but not as high as analysts had forecasted. Consumer confidence fell to 88.7 in November, more than expected. It's the lowest since April. The Conference Board citing shutdown, inflation, and tariffs as consumers' biggest concerns. Pending home sales jumped more than expected in October amid lower mortgage rates. Gas prices are falling as the Thanksgiving travel weekend begins, dropping below $3 per gallon in more than half of U.S. states. But coastal states like California and Washington still charging over $4 a gallon. And that's your Fox Business Report. I'm Laura Cantor, invested in you.
If a Lenovo computer for your business is on your holiday list, don't shop around. Just go directly to the source, Lenovo.com. You'll find exclusive deals on the PCs you want for your business, like the ThinkPad X9 14 Aura Edition and Yoga 7i 2-in-1. So avoid all that shopping chaos and price comparing, and just go directly to the source, Lenovo.com, where PCs are up to 50% off. That's Lenovo.com.
Lenovo.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
What happens to citizen participation when government units consolidate? I'll be right back.
Reagan, in his own voice, is brought to you by Mills Construction. For architectural, metal, roofing, and siding, call Aaron at 610-1256.
Yesterday, I discussed a study on local government reform which must have confounded the liberal establishment wherever it was read because it gave the lie to that old saw that only big government can meet the needs of the people. The study to which I refer was done, I must admit, by a task force I appointed in 1973 when I was still governor of California. It was and is one of those rarities, a study done by a group of independent experts that came up with answers totally contrary to the conventional wisdom of our day. Some of these answers it found are worth repeating because they reflect feelings the average man finds difficult to express, and when he does express them, finds all too often that those in authority will not listen. For instance, the study found that the average citizen's satisfaction with government increases as the size of the governmental unit gets smaller. He also found that there's a strong desire among the people for decentralizing governmental authority and responsibility. In large central cities, there's also a significant demand for some form of neighborhood organization to affect the delivery of public goods and services. Power to the people, it seems, is more than just a radical slogan. It's also a need felt by a good many citizens. The study also finds that there's a strong preference by citizens toward maintaining the autonomy of local governments and that they want to decide the structure of their local government at the ballot box rather than through the legislature or even through appointed local officials. Our study also took a look at local government reform in socialist Sweden, where they reduced the number of local governments from 2,500 to 250. They found that these things resulted. Voter participation in local elections declined. Citizen participation in volunteer civic and service organizations declined. Local elected officials began to differ markedly from the bulk of their constituents and tended to follow the dictates of their consciences rather than the wishes of their constituents. And finally, the resistance of elected officials to spending programs decreased. It's all quite reminiscent of what's been happening here in America in recent years as government has grown bigger and more powerful. Here, too, voter participation has been declining. Fewer and fewer people are taking an interest in volunteer activities. It's easier to let the government do it. Too often our elected officials cease to represent us and instead inflict their views on us. And finally, you may have noticed, the bigger government gets, the bigger a chunk of our income it takes, and the more it spends on your behalf, whether you want it or not. A little bit of Sweden, it appears, is a little bit of knowledge. It can be a dangerous thing to our heritage of keeping government close, responsive, and responsible to the people. We've already lost a lot of that heritage. Only we, the people, can make sure that we don't lose it all. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan, in his own voice, brought to you by Mills Construction, specializing in pre-engineered metal buildings. Call Aaron at 610-1256.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
It's Tuesday. It's 12:30 and the bear is in the building. Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. We have some great guests on our guest line right now calling in, and let me see if I can get this right, from Ma'ale Adumim, Israel, is Wendy DeRoven, my dear friend for many, many years, and she's calling to give us a picture of what's going on in Israel right now, life in Israel since the ceasefire, and prospects for a lasting peace in the Gaza Strip, Israeli politics, which are always exciting and contentious, and we get some reports on that, but it's great to get firsthand knowledge of it. And then it's going to be interesting. I want to talk to Wendy a little bit, if we get to it, about the diverging attitudes of the younger generations in the United States and Israel. Wendy, welcome back to Protecting What Matters.
Thank you, Barry. Pleasure to be back.
Well, it's great to hear your voice. And then from 1 to 2 o'clock, we have another old friend of the show, Edward Ring, Director of Water and Energy at the California Policy Center. We're going to talk about how outsourcing California's oil production is destroying the environment elsewhere, California's precarious and counterproductive energy policies. It's a perfect storm awaits us, and why common sense solution to California's self-imposed water shortage continues to be ignored. You can call or text with questions to 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Wendy, I think the last time you were on the show, you had one foot in your shelter. It was the missiles were flying hot and heavy at that point in time, and you've been kind enough to come on. I know it's late in Israel right now, late night, and but you're an American citizen that moved to Israel with your family about 15 years ago, and you live in a town that's about 4 miles east of Jerusalem, so you are right in the thick of things, And now that the Gaza ceasefire has been in effect for about a couple of months, you know, is there a new normal in Israel that you're experiencing?
I suppose, although we have no idea how long this will last. Our son, who was, Israel, as you know, has a civilian army for the most part. And our son was one of hundreds of thousands who were called up and showed up. And he's been in and out of Gaza since this whole thing started. So for us, the good news is that he finished his service and he's home and back in his life in a high-tech company. But if you, I have friends here right now from Los Angeles visiting, and they're going around as tourists having a great time. They do not feel any difference. They don't see anything. They have wonderful service in the hotels and the restaurants and the museums, and you know, they do not perceive any change because they don't turn on the news.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's pretty much the same for all of us in the cities. It is, however, some of my friends, their sons know they are going in January. They're, you know, my nephew is up in the north somewhere. We don't know what that means. He just had his first child. He is in university, and he's away. He's, you know, he's serving. And
mm-hmm.
So in harm's way. So I think that's the new normal.
It's kind of almost, you know, sounds like it's like a collective PTSD kind of thing. Everybody's still on edge, right?
Right. I mean, we feel like there was COVID, which we all went through, and now we have this is the next, you know, 2-year situation
yeah.
that we're still in.
So what's the consensus view from your perspective on the ceasefire? Do you think it's going to turn into some sort of lasting peace and positive change in the region?
Well, it's an excellent question. We know that President Trump, who we appreciate very much, certainly wants it to succeed. We are beyond thrilled that we got back all the live hostages and almost all of the dead hostages, so that this is incredibly positive. And, you know, most 70% of Israelis were quite willing to make that deal and, quote-unquote, end the war. The problem is that I don't quite understand this, because I think President Trump kind of knew who he was dealing with, but the deal has been made that, you know, they're still there.
Yeah.
You know, Hamas. And they... nobody's disarming them. Mm-hmm. The only ones who possibly could are the Israelis, but he doesn't want us going in there and finishing or doing more, whatever. And they have basically resumed control. They're distributing the food. They're shooting whoever they don't like. And so resistance has kind of dried up to them. And so it's very murky. You know, his first plan, which was to, you know, expel them and redevelop the whole place, we liked that plan. But, of course, nobody would take those people,
yeah.
So, including all the Arab countries. So we knew that was kind of unrealistic. But, you know, while we are still hopeful, very few people really understand how this can work.
So one of the things we hear a lot about here is the Abraham Accords. And of course, everybody has some hope that Saudi Arabia is going to join. I mean, has this been a positive thing, a net positive for Israel so far?
Yes, absolutely. You know, the idea is that if we actually are successful in creating this peace and relations with all of these potential countries, especially Saudi Arabia, that will be actually the victory from the war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the most important thing that can come out of it, and Bibi very much wants that for his legacy. That's, you know, very critical. You know, they want a high price tag, although they talk about, you know, a pathway to a Palestinian state and so forth. However, none of them care for the Palestinians at all. They will not let them into their countries. You know, they say one thing in Arabic and a different thing in English.
Yeah, the Palestinians are kind of have since, you know, Israel's, you know, inception in 1948 have really been unfortunate pawns in the Arab countries' calculus there, right?
Right. Well, they also made a lot of unfortunate moves.
Mm-hmm.
There are many, many Arabs who are living here since 1948, or their grandparents, you know, they did not flee, they stayed, and they are actively productive members of Israel. They're in the Knesset, which is our parliament. They are judges, they are doctors. You know, they have succeeded very well. The women certainly drive and are in high tech and are in, you know, most of our pharmacists in Israel are Arab women. Don't ask me why. It's just how it is. So, you know, the ones that stayed and chose peaceful life as productive citizens have a great life. They're not trying to run away. They're not, you know, going to any other country. They're staying.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. Real quickly, I mean, so basically, I mean, we watched with amazement while the war was going on with what the Israelis did with the pagers, the Hezbollah, and of course the joint U.S.-Israeli destruction of Iran's nuclear capacity. I mean, that whole thing was unprecedented, really, in its scope. I mean, do you think that Iran is at least for the time being been neutered? What's the feeling in Israel? Are they still making trouble? Are they still trying to stand up, you know, proxies to fight you?
Oh, they definitely have been neutered we figure about a 2-year window. But we are getting reports. They have no water in Tehran. The people are leaving the city because there's no water, and yet they are busy trying to bring in arms from China, from all kinds, wherever, to store them in Yemen and different places. They're not finished. They will sacrifice the Iranian people on the altar of destruction of Israel. That is, from a religious point of view, that is holy to them.
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the things that should be clear is that the Saudis and the, I guess, the Sunni Arabs don't really like the Iranians either. So they're, that's one of the big connections for the Abraham Accords, that Israel provides can provide them with a ready ally against Iran. Let's move on to your politics. It's probably as contentious, if not more contentious, than the United States.
I think it's pretty even.
Yeah, it seems like Bibi Netanyahu is almost universally disliked, even in the United States and Israel. And a lot of it, and there's some issues. What's going on with your government? Is he still pretty much firmly in charge, or are you looking at elections here pretty quick?
Well, we're supposed to have elections in a year's time, but being a parliamentary system, that can change at any time. He actually had a very nice bump up in his numbers since the hostages were released, because that was one of the goals, and that was accomplished. There are those that love him and those that hate him, no matter what, which sounds very familiar to Americans. But he has some problems. He wants a legacy, like other people, and the legacy he wants is this peaceful Abraham Accords, but he also wants a safe Israel. That's critical to him. On the downside, he wants his personal freedom, and the coalition that can best guarantee that for him is this right-wing coalition, but he's got trouble there because the Supreme Court has ruled that he has to draft the ultra-Orthodox, or the Haredim, and there's tremendous opposition from them. But the vast majority of the Israeli public wants them to participate fully.
What percentage of the population is that?
It's about 20%.
Wow.
But it's growing because they have a lot of children.
Yeah.
A lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very capable people. But this is, like you could say, the religion is what's informing the Hamas and those people. It's informing these Haredim. They will not do what their head rabbis do not tell them is okay to do. And right now, they are keeping their study halls, their seminaries and yeshivas, what we call them, full. And I have some friends or interactions with some people who are from that world, and they tell me that their husbands would like to draft and to serve, but they cannot do it because the societal pressures would be too strong.
What is it? A strain of pacifism? Is that what it is?
No. There's a value of studying the Torah.
Okay.
Jewish studies. And they feel that anything that takes away from that, whether it's work, for a lot of them, they don't work. All they do is study, the men, and the women support these huge families. Anything that's considered a waste of time. So they do not want to take away from their Torah studies. They do not want the environment of the army, which might lead them astray. However, the army has made separate battalions for them, very accommodating to their needs. But, you could say maybe it's a power thing. The rabbis don't want to lose their flock. I don't know.
So Bibi is being forced by the courts to bring them into the military, basically.
Yes, he's going to have to decide soon, one way or the other.
That's interesting. We'll have to keep an eye on that. Let me again shift gears because this is a big deal. We are seeing in the United States, as you well know, a great deal of anti-Semitism rise up on the left and the right. How do Israelis view that? Or is anybody what kind of notice and what's being said about that?
Oh, they're very, very, very concerned, of course, because the Jewish world is one big family, really.
Mm-hmm. But or one small family, really.
Yeah, one small family. We the way I've come to see it is that, and I only understand this since I moved here to Israel from the United States, where I had a wonderful life and a very productive life, and we were involved in our community, in the local government, in business. We were very active people, certainly voted all the time, but we were part of a minority. Mm-hmm. And I felt it every you know, starting November, Christmas music everywhere, and it's beautiful, and it's nice, and I wish everyone well, but it reminded me that that's not my holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So when you live in Israel, and the holidays are my holidays, and, you know, I'm not a minority. So I think Israelis who haven't traveled a lot and are just living here don't really grasp the danger or how bad it feels.
Mm-hmm.
Or how what could happen as much as somebody who's in the diaspora. I mean, we see the news, of course, and each event is, you know, people here are recalibrating where should they travel to, where can they go on vacation, and where should they spend their vacation dollars, and they don't want to go to places that are anti.
Right. That makes, yeah, makes a lot of sense. You know, one of the things that's disturbing to me about the anti-Semitism I'm seeing is that it seems to be, you know, festering, I'll use that term, in our Gen Z population. You know, that, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they are getting such a crappy education in the United States. You know, they don't get taught history or any of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you mentioned last week when we talked was how you had great concerns in Israel about your younger generation, and you've been pleasantly surprised about how they responded to the war. You want to share some of that? And we got about a minute or so left, but take your time. We could always roll it at the next segment.
Okay.
Yeah. So what did you see? What did you see with your Gen Z population, you know, group as the
right.
war
well,
progressed?
You know, I think very much like in the United States, there's a lot of talk about the greatest generation, and if the young kids today had to fight World War II, America would not do well. You know, a lot of people thought the same of the young generation here because they're very busy with their high tech and their lattes and their, you know, all the accoutrements that the young generation has now and all their focuses. But they not only did they show up, but they were incredibly devoted and self-sacrificing and brave and just in every way possible. And like when the war first started and Israel drafted 300,000, they got a response of 350,000. And people came, they were on, it's a custom here when a person, young person finishes their army service, they're a mandatory 3 years, they go on trips around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what they do. These kids came running back. They couldn't get on flights. All the flights were full, and they, you know, were on standby for days to come back and fight. And that was, for all of us, a wonderful thing to see.
Well, yeah, and again, I mean, it's interesting how wars or national disasters do bring a country together. I mean, it's sad that that's what it has to be, really, when it comes right down to it.
Right.
Well, we're coming up on a break here. I just wanted to, and then I want to talk about these settler issues that you're having on the West Bank. I guess it's the East. Is the West?
It's called the West Bank.
The West Bank.
Everything is west of the river, so
right.
It's kind of a terrible name.
Well, I just remember when you came up to the ranch to visit me a few years back, I asked you, why the heck did you move to Israel? And you said, we wanted to be at the front lines, and you're definitely at the front lines. So
yeah.
I'm going to put you on hold for a second. And then, folks, when we get back, we'll be continue our visit with Wendy, and we're going to talk about Israeli settler attacks against Palestinians and IDF soldiers in the West Bank. So, folks, stand by. We'll be right back in about 2 minutes.
Before we realize it, we will begin celebrating another New Year. At Davis Body Shop, we have taken part in over 50 New Year celebrations, and it started back in 1962. Over these years, our New Year's resolutions have remained the same, giving you impeccable quality workmanship, always giving you a written guarantee, giving you the very best value, and making sure that your experience is as pleasant as possible. And that includes assisting you in getting your insurance paperwork filed properly. Remember, at Davis Body Shop, you get a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Davis Body Shop has two locations, one on El Camino Real, downtown Atascadero, and the other on Theater Drive at Paso Chevrolet. From the Davis Body Shop family to yours, best wishes for a happy holiday season.
Let's be honest, everyone hates putting up Christmas lights. So why not just skip it this year? The truth is, it's not about the lights. It's about creating the memories. It's about seeing the kids' faces light up and not spending all day hanging up lights. I'm Aaron King, the owner of Slow Holiday Lights. We handle everything you need to make this holiday season the most memorable yet. We design, install, maintain, and store the beautiful Christmas lights so you don't have to lift a finger. No ladders to fall off of, no tangled lights to mess with, no stress, period. Look us up at slowholidaylights.com.
This is Sunny from the Floral Parlor. Have you ever wondered why memorial flowers are chosen from a book? It seems so impersonal. Your loved one was one of a kind. Their celebration of life should be just as unique, whether they were a rugged cowboy or a sweet grandma who loved tulips. We take the time to learn about their life and create floral designs that tell their story. Let the Floral Parlor create something special within your budget that adds value to their remembrance. The Floral Parlor in downtown Paso Robles.
I think I heard you coming.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with my friend, Wendy DeRoven, who's calling in with a report from Israel. You can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So before I get to this closing topic, Wendy, you are an American citizen. What are you doing for Thanksgiving this week?
Oh, I'm cooking. I have a big turkey that I'm going to be brining tomorrow.
Okay. All right. And then do you have a big family get-together?
Oh, we sure do.
Sounds good. Maybe next time I come to Israel, I'll come around Thanksgiving. That would be fun, actually.
A deal.
All right. So the other news that's coming out of Israel, I guess it's really kind of disturbing because, and it's a very complex matter. There are news reports of Israeli West Bank settlers who are committing violence, not just aimed at Palestinians, but also Israeli military forces. So can you unpack this and what are the root causes, what's going on and all that type of thing? And I mean, you must have a front row seat here because you're east of Jerusalem. So this is an eyewitness report. Tell us what this is all about.
Okay, so, I mean, technically I am a settler. I live in a town of 40,000 people that is, you know, in what they call a settlement.
Mm-hmm.
What is going on? What you don't hear? There, in the Oslo Accords, they made Area A, B, and C. Area A was given to the Palestinians. B is under Israeli military control, and C is under Israeli control for Israeli civilians to live and so forth. That's where I live.
Mm-hmm.
I see out my window, I overlook the desert. I see overnight they will put up, and this is all funded by the EU, out of nowhere, all of a sudden there's a little schoolhouse. Nothing else. It's like a little caravan. And there are no children. There's no nothing. And then before you know it, they bring a water tank, they bring different things, and they manufacture a history. They give it a name.
They being the Palestinians.
Palestinians funded by the EU.
Okay,
yes.
All right.
And on these structures, it actually says placards, donated by the EU. So they're trying to create facts on the ground.
Mm.
But we just had an incident in the more rural areas where some Jewish shepherds, their flock of goats were poisoned. They were fed poisoned dates by the Arab shepherds. Now, you don't hear that, you know. But It is not accepted by Israel, by the Israeli population, for anyone to commit violence against anyone else. It's for the police to deal with all these matters, or the army, whatever it may be. However, these are young kids. They're typically around 18 years old or less, and they live on these hilltops, and they live in caravans, and they live in they're not on the grid. Like, they're kind of hippies, is the best way to put it. And they just kind of take matters into their own hands. Now, some of their grievances are quite legitimate, and the army is not doing anything, and the police are not doing anything. Other things are completely unacceptable. So, yes, especially Bibi, Bibi's government is cracking down on them. They have to. They will. But we also don't see them cracking down the other way on the Arabs who do these things. So that's why these kids get very frustrated, because they don't think it's fair. How come only we have to abide by the law and they don't?
So, and really, the Palestinians in these areas, they don't have, there's no effective government, really, for the Israeli government to deal with. It's all, the Israeli government has to basically manage all this?
I mean, it depends on the area, but the PA, the Palestinian Authority, which gets millions and millions of dollars from the EU, from the Americans, from, you know, all kinds of places, they have their police force, which Israel had to give them guns and everything under Oslo. They're supposed to deal with all this, but they don't. You know, it's you make an agreement and you expect it to be upheld, and then who do you talk to when they don't? And they have to pay for Slay and everything else.
And so, and why is the EU, European Union, funding this?
Well, as you've probably heard, there's been a tremendous influx of Muslim immigrants to Europe, coming up from Africa. And they are in huge numbers there. The most popular name for a newborn boy in Britain is Mohammed. So this is what's going on, and they're trying, I believe, to appease and quiet their local population. So since World War II, they have to be extra anti-war and extra, you know, the opposite of what led to World War II. So this is part of what drives them now. They're just...
So you're saying that this is all wrapped up with this mass migration of, you know, Muslims to Europe, and they're trying to just kind of keep, this is an extension of that problem.
We understand a lot of it to be coming from there, like Macron recently, the president of France, with his recent proclamations. I mean, he's got a tremendous population there that he's trying to keep happy. And that they should vote him in again, you know.
That's very interesting. So you guys are in the crosshairs of that problem, too.
We sure are.
All right. Well, in the last minute or so that we have left, maybe 30 seconds, is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know about what's going on in Israel? Did we miss any topics that you think are important?
I think they should know how much the Israelis love the United States and admire it and appreciate everything, and hope that our relationship will remain good, and that we do not want American boots on the ground. We have net value to the United States in terms of security and tech and data.
Well, again, I mean, it's you're probably the best allies we have in the world. So, Wendy, thank you so much for everything and taking the time. Happy Thanksgiving and happy upcoming Hanukkah, okay?
Thank you, Barry. You too, to everybody, all of your listeners.
Thank you. The best to you. All right, folks, we'll be back on the other side of the break with Edward Ring. So stand by.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 1 o'clock.